Welcome, welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
You hear that, Earth? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, your number one audio source for Harry Potter news, theories, discussion, as well as info straight from the makers of the books and films themselves, like me, Matt Lewis. I play Neville Longbottom in the Harry Potter films, and I'm very happy to be here helping introduce your hosts, the Pottercast trio, Melissa, John, and Sue.
Trying to get by this week without Melissa, it's Pottercast 80.
Ooh.
The Big J, and the lovely Lady Sue.
Hello!
Melissa is off being a rock star with the various rocking, wizarding rock bands, Harry and the Potters, and the whole gang out there. In Toronto, I think, isn't she, Sue?
She was in Toronto. I think now she's in Montreal, maybe,
too. Oh, my gosh.
I know. She's traveling.
All those crazy Canadian places. That's awesome.
It is beautiful.
Well, we've got a pretty awesome show this week, I have to say, regardless, even if this is one of those shows without Miss Melissa. We have loads of information about the new Harry Potter film, Order of the Phoenix, due out in July.
Mm-hmm. Lots.
We have probably so much that you're about ready to hear the return of the Pottercast world-famous spoiler warning.
Uh-oh.
Because if any of you have not been on Leaky lately to hear about there was a screening of the film recently in Chicago. About a week ago, wasn't it, Sue?
Yeah, just about a week ago. By the time you all hear it, it'll be just a little over a week.
That's true. Just a bit over a week. And we have a interview with somebody who was in attendance to the screening. His name is Carlos, a real cool cat. And we're going to get to that shortly after the news and shortly after a word from our awesomely cool friends at Borders. Take it, Sue.
Today's Pottercast is brought to you by Borders. Coming this spring, Borders is offering an exclusive 2008 Harry Potter wall calendar featuring images chosen by our customers, loyal Harry Potter fans like you. Vote for the pictures you'd like to see in this exciting calendar. Simply click on the Borders banner at the top of the Pottercast website. Also, be sure to reserve Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows at Borders. It will be 40% off, and you'll get a free sticker. Choose from Trust Snape, where Snape is a very bad man. Hurry in! They're only available at Borders.
I totally want a bunch of those stickers.
I do too. I wonder if they would just give it to us because we're in both at the same time, you know?
Oh, that's so awesome. What's that? What's a wall calendar they're making? That sounds pretty neat.
Yes, it is. It's really cool. They have a bunch of pictures from like all the movies. And they even have some from Order of the Phoenix, too. And then you can choose, you are allowed to vote for five. You're allowed to vote as much as you want, but...
They're from the movies?
Yes, they're big stills from the movies, and they're going to put them in their special calendar that they're making.
Very cool.
But you're allowed to pick which one you want. So, I mean, there's some really cool ones, and there's some ones that are, you know, typical, but...
Sure, sure.
I mean, but my favorite one, I got to admit, is the one of Snape, when he's the Bogart Snape, and he's dressed, you know, Neville's grandmother.
Do they have any of the Whomping Willow?
No... Sorry.
Rats. Someone should just make a suggestion.
Why do you like the Willow?
The Willow is pretty hardcore, I have to say.
Yeah.
Pretty violent.
It is. You know, I like that part in the game. This is completely random, but I just like that part in the game, too, when they the Whomping Willow. It's fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't move on. But yes, we do have news, so we have some news. So
yeah, there's a little bit of news. Susan, you want to take away with some news?
Yeah, I'll do it.
All right, let's hear some news.
An early screening of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix tops our news this week, as a select group in Chicago were treated to an early look at the fifth Harry Potter film. TLC was able to bring you a very detailed and revealing look at the newest movie, and you will hear much more from the gentleman who attended this screening later on in our show. You can also read his review by clicking on LeakyNews.com. Another film-related news now, Variety is reporting that Order of the Phoenix will be available to many fans worldwide this summer, as Warner Brothers is planning on having the film shown on over 10,000 movie screens everywhere. Actress Emma Watson, who plays Hermione Granger, of course, has donated several autographed items from the world of Harry Potter for a charity auction which features signatures of Dan Radcliffe, Rupert Grint, and Emma herself. There's also a special tote bag given to members of the fifth Harry Potter movie. You can find more information and links for this auction, which runs until March 15th, via our website. Directors Dan Radcliffe, Alan Rickman, Jason Isaacs, and John Hurt are all taking part of a new effort in the UK to help students learn more about the ins and outs of movie making and of film. Several of the actors will also be appearing in some of the schools in the UK as part of an effort known as Film Club. Finally, there are some more NECA toy reviews and previews now online, detailing the new action figures due this summer tied in with release of the fifth Harry Potter movie. Also, our friends at Borders are asking Harry Potter fans to vote on images from the Potter movies to be included in a brand new 2008 wall calendar. If you would like, you can vote by clicking on the banner at the top of our page at leakingnews.com. In quick book news now, Mary Graham Prey, the illustrator of the U.S. editions of the Harry Potter novels, has donated several pieces of work to a charity auction in Florida, one being of a sketch of Harry from Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. And finally, voting is now open at the Nick Kids' Choice Awards, where the Harry Potter books are up for Best Book Series. Voting is open to all members of the public via nick.com, and these awards will be presented on March 31st. Well, for all of these items and much more, please click on LeakyNews.com, which is updated daily with your dose of all things Harry Potter. And back to the show we go.
Excellent news. Can I say?
Yes, yes. Well, I don't know. I mean, how can you compare? We're going to have more of it coming up. But that screening was just...
There's little bits and tidbits trickling in from a little bit everywhere. But as we learned from Carlos, there's about almost 2,000 people there.
I know.
That's insane.
Amazing.
I've never been to a theater that can hold 2,000 people.
Well, we have, like, where I live in the Detroit area, we have these big, like, metroplexes, and we have one that's, like, it's almost IMAX size, but it's not.
Wow.
The screen is, you know, and it has those, what they call stadium seating, so I bet it was something like that in Chicago, but...
Yeah.
My goodness. Can you imagine? You'll hear that he is kind of a surprise, and it's just fabulous, and... I would be out of my mind if I got to see that early.
Oh, man. I got to say, that'd be pretty darn cool. Well, we're going to talk all about that. But
yes.
What else stuck on your mind for the news this week, Suze?
Well, one of my most interesting things, because I'm a dorky Girl Scout, and I know we've all talked about this, but the summer camps are a dilemma because the release of Harry Potter and Deathly Hallows comes out in the middle of the summer, and a lot of the kids, of course, want to go and get their books at midnight, but... Some of the summer camps are saying, you're not going out at midnight.
Can't leave camp?
No. So there are a bunch of unhappy campers.
Oh.
Well, you know.
Oh, so what are they going to do? Are they going to bring the books into the camp?
Well, yeah. Some are organizing, like, field trips. They're like, and then one camp said they were going to do, like, have the counselors read it out loud so people won't be spoiled. I'm like, oh,
what do you think they are, Stephen Fry, working at the camp? They're not qualified to read that book. Are you kidding me?
I know, you know. I mean, I can understand why, you know, because of the liability issues and responsibility, because a lot of these camps are remote. Because I used to go to summer camp, and I used to work at summer camps up in New Hampshire. And they're fairly remote and out in the woods, and so I can understand why at midnight. But still, I mean, this is a huge global event. I don't know.
I can't imagine, like, being at, like, a camp and, like, them trying to do activities around Harry Potter. Because I can just picture them, you know, reading a few chapters and then, like, making everybody stop and making macaroni pictures. About what they read.
That's right. And you have to paint it, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or making, like, horcruxes from, like, two paper plates taped together with, like, beans inside to make little shaker horcruxes.
That's right. You always take those. You always had those toilet paper tubes. Always had to save those in milk cartons,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, making kaleidoscopes.
Yeah.
Or big wands.
Exactly. That would be cool, though. We could go teach that bomb.
Obviously, I've never really actually been to camp. I just have many camp stereotypes.
Yes, uh-huh. But you're right, though. That's funny.
That'd be fun, though. I'd make macaroni pictures about Harry Potter. Send in your best macaroni pictures about Book 7.
And
fabulous prizes.
Awesome.
That's a Pottercast blog challenge this week.
Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine, like, a big, giant, like, macaroni, like, you know.
Macaroni. I've seen huge macaroni, like, mosaic painting-looking things. But, no, don't overwork yourself.
I mean, I've seen it made out of Legos, but never out of macaroni before.
Macaroni and glue and paper?
Yeah.
It's a good medium.
That's amazing.
Well, what else are the camping people?
We saw some more, another NECA toy review of the new toys that are action figures that are going to be released when the movies comes out. And we also saw some more Snape action figures. But the one toy review, I have to say, pointed out something about the Voldemort.
Oh.
action figure, you know, and he's got these black robes on, right?
Yeah.
And then they show the Voldemort figure from the back.
Oh.
And it's like blowing up so you can kind of like see the backside of Voldemort.
His
bum? Yeah.
Well, Voldemort's bum?
Yes. I mean, you should see
I gotta
this,
go look at this again. I must have missed that.
Well, and the thing is, they put like a girl like laying on the floor to show the scale because these things are big, and it looks like the girl is looking up Voldemort's.
No
it's
way!
It's hilarious. Yes, it does. I'm not. I know this is a family thing, but if you go look at this, like I couldn't believe.
Oh, you've got to be kidding! Review of the new NECA Harry Potter toys.
Uh-huh, and click on the link to this guy's website, and he's got these incredible pictures. We have some of our in our gallery.
Yeah.
And you look at the one, you go scroll down, it's about midway, and there's the backside of Voldemort. You can see his pasty pale leg. And I mean, it's a bit more of Voldemort than I really, really...
Oh, they have a little Cerber error on at the moment.
Oh, drastic.
Are they in our galleries?
Yeah, we're putting them in there. So by the time it's there, they'll all be in our galleries. And
Oh, that's so darn funny.
It's like, and the girl is like leaning back, like she's like falling in horror, like, ah.
Voldemort like would totally whack that girl. And look up his thing. Well, Voldemort, does he not believe in underwear?
I don't know. I mean, do Dark Lords worry about it? I mean, because he has no shoes, so he's not obviously a fashionista, so.
He's a naturalist.
Know. He is! He must be just letting it all hang out. Like,
I guess so. Well, who knows what sort of parts that poor guy's got after that reincarnation.
That's a thought I really... Really don't think about.
I don't think Joe spared much time for those thoughts.
But it's so funny, these guys that came up, I mean, they're paid a lot of money to make these figures, and they came up with that. I just was like, okay.
Hilarious.
It is funny. Funny. There's one more kind of cool bit of news.
Yeah.
Dan Radcliffe, Alan Rickman, Jason Isaacs, and John Hurt are all supporting, in the UK, there's this new thing called Film Club that students in the UK learn about movies, and they're going to learn about the Harry Potter films, and they're going to go to their school.
Yeah. Oh, no way.
Yes.
That's
Isn't
really
that cool.
I'd like to have
gonna
class. Come?
Yes.
Oh, wait, you said Dan Radcliffe,
Alan Rickman,
Tony Mosley, Jason Isaacs. What?
Tony Maudsley?
Not Tony? He's not invited?
I didn't see his name on the list. Maybe
he's going to be the special guest. The surprise guest.
Can you imagine? That would be awesome. And everyone would, you know, forget Snape. Forget
no,
Rickman.
Alan Rickman, what's he done? He's overrated when you put the likes of Tony out there.
Yeah, I think so. Totally. Oh, man, we got to meet Mr. Maudsley.
I'm sure that can probably be arranged.
I mean, imagine having class though with those guys. I think that's really...
It'd be unbelievable.
It would be awesome. I would just...
I'd pay to be at school that day.
I would too, because, you know, I mean, a lot of times you're like, oh man, how boring.
Can you imagine those poor kids that, like, don't do their homework the night before, that, like, get in school suspensions in the principal's office while Harry Potter and Snape are in their school?
Right, exactly.
I'd cry my eyes out.
You kind of wonder if Alan Rickman will go turn to page 3.
I know he's going to walk in.
That would be awesome. Oh, I'd love to hear that. That would be cool.
Awesome.
My goodness. But, of course, the big news of the week is our from our review that we had on our website. Just had, like, about 700 comments or something.
Oh, my. Yeah, just a few comments. Well, that aren't... Everybody is so excited for this movie. Everybody is so excited for July, period. But
yeah.
For the people who can put aside the... anticipation for book 7 for a short enough time to think about Order of the Phoenix film. Lots of news from that this week, and we have an excellent informant who has seen the film at the Chicago screening. His name is Carlos, and I think it's about time to pull him in here. What do you say?
Let's do it. Warning, the following interview contains possible spoiler information on the Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix film due out in July, based on a recent review of a screening held in Chicago. If you want to avoid spoilers, please, you would be advised to go listen to another podcast now. The following views also contained do not necessarily reflect those of Pottercast nor the Leaky Cauldron.
Welcome, Carlos. How you doing?
I'm pretty good.
We got Carlos here. Carlos has seen the Order of the Phoenix film in Chicago recently in a screening.
Lucky. Woo!
Yeah, I think there's a lot of envy going on right now on the site.
Yeah.
No, it didn't cause any flurry at all. No reaction, none at all. No.
Yeah, just a blip.
Yeah. Well, we, as many of you have probably seen on the main site, we have posted Carlos's report of his reaction to seeing the film with a few other dozen, hundred, I don't know. How many people were there, do you suppose, Carlos?
It's a pretty good-sized theater here in downtown Chicago. It was probably about maybe 2,000 people.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
That's a whole lot of people.
Yes, it was.
But,
and you know, when we first got to the theater, the line was ridiculous, and I said, oh, no. I said, yeah. Anytime somebody gives away something for free, no matter what it is.
Sure.
Right.
There's a line, you know?
Oh, totally.
And
well, let's tell people, how did you get that? How did you get to, I mean, find out about this? I mean, that's so awesome. I mean, one of 2,000 people. I mean, how cool is that? How did that happen?
Sure, this is how it went. A cousin of mine, he sent me an email with a link that I should go online and register for a screening that he had received a flyer for. And we went online, you know, and just registered, and all it said was, actually, there were two screenings. So we registered for both of the screenings, and then all we had to do was bring that invite with us to the screenings, and it said, you know, the times and the places where the screenings would be. But for the Potter movie, we weren't told anything about it. All it said was a holiday movie. That's all it said. That's all it said. It was a surprise. So you can imagine when the person that kind of emceed the event, when he actually announced that we were one of the first audiences in the world to see, and then, of course, he held it out dramatically, and he yells out, the new Harry Potter, and then, you know, the place just erupted.
Oh,
it was
God.
Incredible. After that, I just had to sit on the edge of my seat and try to record as much as I could.
Right.
Well,
and you
record
mean recording your brain. Right.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes. Yes, most definitely recording my brain, because the whole process was we had to stand in line, of course, and then they inspected our bags, anybody with bags. And if anybody had cell phones with a camera, they made them all check them in, which was quite a hassle.
Okay.
You can imagine 2,000 people.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
The propensity of cell phones was pretty high, so everybody had to get it back in line to check phones in.
Oh, gosh.
Well, so what is it like when the movie started? I mean, was that just like a moment that people, like, start applauding and just
Of course.
Go, wow.
People applauded and were really excited, and then he just, like, ducked off of the front of the stage there, and he ran to the back, and right away the movie started. There were no opening credits.
Okay.
You know, as most Potter films, when they open, there's no really opening credits. It just kind of, all you see is the Warner Brothers logo,
yeah.
And then
right.
It just fades into the movie, and that is exactly the way this one started. There was no difference, as it were.
Was there any music, though, or anything like that, either?
I was expecting Hedwig's theme. But
right.
none of that. It was just like a small, sort of a little bit of an orchestral score. I think they may have cannibalized it from the other films, because they had said, the gentleman who announced the movie, he had said that, of course, this is not a complete movie. There's a CGI that's not complete, and the soundtrack isn't the actual soundtrack that's going to be on there.
Okay. God, because
so
I remember.
That really didn't detract from the experience, but I mean, you had to keep that in mind while watching the movie.
Yeah. The soundtrack adds so much to these movies, especially like the opening, your opening impression of it. I just remember seeing Goblet of Fire the first time, and listening to that music come up with the Warner Brothers logo and then in the cemetery. It's like that just made the whole first minute.
I agree. It was very eerie and foreboding sort of score. And this, like I said, this what we heard. I mean, it wasn't bad, but you can tell it was nowhere near finished.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Wow.
Well, Order of the Phoenix. I remember reading that book, and I remember reading it and thinking to myself, okay, this is where the film's going to start. They're going to do this, and then the logo will come up, and then I could visualize it in my head and how I would have done the movie, and that would have been, I would have done some of the scene in the alley with the Dementors and Harry and Dudley first, and then, you know, probably right at that chapter break is when I would have brought up the WB logo and actually dug into the movie.
But I see what you're saying.
I don't think it went that way, but I'm hoping, considering what we've known and what we've seen, that there was a little bit of Dudley and all that stuff in the beginning of the film. Is that
correct? Yeah. Well, the movie begins like that, and basically it's almost like a shot of the Earth, and then the camera just keeps zooming in, and then you see Surrey. And you hear, like, this buzz in the background, like radio and television sort of just kind of in the background talking about the drought and how everything is parched and whatnot. And then they show you, like, the grass, the countryside, everything is, like, brown and, like, dried out, sort of the way California looks sometimes.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And then there's a bird's-eye view of a playground where Harry and his you just see Harry from the bird's eye. He's sitting on a swing, and then the next shot of it is like kind of a wider shot, and you see like Harry, and then of course then Harry looks up because he, you know, Dudley has said something to him, so he looks up and there's Dudley.
Yeah.
And I gotta tell you, Dudley, wait till you guys see, like, Dudley and his gang, quote-unquote gang.
Yeah.
Because this little band of misanthropes is... Yeah. it's really funny to see on screen, because what they're wearing is
oh, no.
You know, Dudley's got, like, the hip-hop
chain around his neck.
Right,
he's got his bling, right. Yeah, he's got his bling going,
Oh, no. So funny. I just picture one of those kids with one of those hats with a little pinwheels at the top of them that spin around.
You know what?
Talking about...
I thought that might be in there as well, but it wasn't. It was totally like updated and very muggle.
Oh gosh, that's so funny. They weren't iPods.
No, I don't remember seeing anybody wearing an iPod, but I don't even remember anybody with headphones on or anything. But that would have been a nice touch.
They had Potter's headphones.
Yeah, absolutely.
Be pretty funny. A little nod to the podcast.
So did the movie then, from that scene, did it go, like, obviously there's Dementors in there. Would those finish? I mean, you said that the effects weren't done. Were those guys, the creatures, finished? Or?
Yeah, that looked pretty finished. The only thing, maybe, that the coloring on them probably wasn't completely done. You know how they do very intricate shading and coloring on those creatures? I mean, they were pretty much done. But it wasn't the way the Dementors looked in Prisoner of Azkaban.
Really?
They changed again?
Yeah.
The Dementors don't change.
The Dementors looked a little bit more skeletal in nature, and they didn't have, like, the flowing robes.
No flowing robes?
Whoa.
Oh, yeah.
So they're not, like, race anymore? They're not, like, the ring race? They're more just... So what were they... They didn't have any black on at all, or...?
No. They looked more like... If you can imagine... I don't know if you guys remember the film Sinbad.
Yeah.
With those weird skeletons, when they were fighting those skeletons on that island.
Oh no! Oh no! That thing's so hokey. Oh no!
They got naked.
No! I don't mean they were hokey like that.
Okay.
In the sense that they, you know, but they were very skeletal like that, very long, elongated bones, and very just creepy because they just kind of float. And then they were, like, sticking underneath. It was really weird. It's like they were, because this is the scene where they run into the tunnel, and they were just kind of sticking to the, they were, like, appearing out of the, from the walls.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They kind of came through.
They can go through walls?
Well, this is what it looked like, you know, as far as my recollection.
Uh-oh.
Whoa. So they're naked, and they can walk through walls.
Uh-oh.
That's a little different than Azkaban.
Basically.
Though, to be fair, rendering cloth and especially flowing robes and things like that, you know, into that final composite may not have happened.
Yeah, that's true.
That is true. That is true.
Because that's kind of complex. But that'd be so Oh, God.
So, okay, the movie goes along, and you know, the big thing is, you know, in the book, you've read the books, correct? right, Carlos?
Yes, that is
so,
correct.
So one thing we all talk about in the fandom is the all-cap angry Harry, because he was all the time Harry was, yeah. So did you sense as the movie went on that this Harry was angry when you saw him in your scenes, or?
He's definitely perturbed.
Yeah.
I won't say he's angry 100% of the time, but he's definitely working out some issues. He's very angsty, you know, and which I guess for that time of your life when you're in adolescence like that, I mean, you're very prone to like be set off, and that's the way Harry kind of looked like he was on edge most of the movie.
Yeah.
Mm. Hey, real quick, I had a question about that Dementor scene, just because it
sure.
just popped into my head. As we were reading that scene, there's a part when Harry loses his wand and he's grabbing for it, and he can't see, and he says Lumos, and his wand lights up, but he's not touching his wand, and everybody's like, "Oh, did Harry do a wandless magic there?" And it's like, "Oh, is that like a clue? Is that there on purpose?" And I don't know, something that small made it into the movie. Did he ever lose his wand at any point?
That does actually make it into the movie.
I'll be
done. Because when he's attacked, he sees Dudley attacked, and as he's reaching for his wand, that's when the other Dementor kind of grabs him. And so his wand kind of falls by the wayside, and he's reaching for it, and in fact he does say Lumos, and it does light up.
Oh my God! They added it, and I'm impressed.
Wow! So
that's
really helpful, though. I mean, for us fans, they're taking this, they're putting a little bit more of these details in from the book. So, did you notice any other things like that as you were watching the film? That like minor things that you might have thought, oh, they'll just blow that off, and it was in there.
You know what? It's been about a year and a half since I read the book.
Yeah.
And I've only read it once, unfortunately, like most of the fandom has read it multiple times. So I didn't remember, you know, specific details like that getting in there that I did not think were going to be make it into the movie.
Well,
in the sense that, one thing I was thinking about at the beginning of the movie, all I kept thinking about is like, I remember St. Mungo.
Oh, right, right.
You know, and that was something that was going on in my head. I said, ooh, I can't wait to see what this crazy, you know, wizarding hospital looks like. And, of course, it didn't make it in there.
Oh.
Yeah.
So I was kind of bummed because of that.
There was one thing.
Only so much money and time in the world to make these sets.
Speaking of the sets, John was able to go to the set visit and able to visit, but I hadn't. And so I wanted to get your opinion, Carlos, on what you thought of the like sets, like the man, you know, Grim Old Place and the magic of Ministry of Magic.
Sure. As far as like the set design, I was very impressed. I mean, it had that feeling of like. Maybe like the first movie, how everything was like really, really pristine and really, really cool looking. You know what I'm saying? And the set that, in the sense that the sets were like, they weren't hokey. You know, it was really, I don't know. It was just it just seemed to be of a higher quality than some of the other movies. It seemed like they had let that slip a little bit. And since they weren't focusing on certain aspects of like say Hogwarts. They didn't really, you know, you didn't get that sense that, like, they were paying too much attention to that.
Right.
But in this movie, you do, like, Grim Old Place, of course, it's like, it's kind of dank and kind of dirty.
Yeah.
And you definitely get that feeling of, like, wow, this is a place no one's lived in for years.
Yeah. So with Mama Black there, did they have her? The portraits on the wall, like Mrs. Black or Phineas Nigellus, were those portraits there? Or was this the effects that weren't finished? Or
you see the portraits, but they're covered up.
Oh, okay.
And then on one particular portrait, I remember there being a lot of green. There was a green screen placeholder there.
Oh.
So I don't know what actually is going to be within that particular shot, but I'm sure it's going to be somebody sitting there, and I don't know who because there wasn't like a tag that said, you know, Phineas.
Yeah.
Or there wasn't a tag that said, you know, I can't remember her
Mama
name
Mama Black,
right now.
Mother Black, or, you know, Sirius's mom.
Yes.
I don't know what her name is, but Ralph.
Exactly. Ralph, I mean, it wasn't there. But her portrait was just covered.
Right.
Because, you know, you see Creature in there.
yes, Creature.
who was going to delight a lot of people because he's very mean and he's got his ears droop a little more and he's got like a kind of a scowl on his face and but he's really mean. I mean, yeah. He just the things he says are like brutal.
Well, his voice is perfect. I had a chance to hear his voice recently.
Mm-hmm.
It is just this low drawl kind of. Oh, it's so funny. It's so grumpy. I know, was it in your report that I read that they were able to get into Grimmauld Place with just whacking the door a few times with Moody's stick?
Well, actually, Moody kind of, like, banged his stick on the ground in front of Grimmauld Place.
Oh.
And,
like the Bulgarian?
Pardon me?
Like the Bulgarians with the sparks and their big sticks?
Yes.
No!
Awesome.
What was kind of cool was you see like the occupants of the building where Grimmauld Place is, and the camera like you know kind of shows them and shows them how like when the building's coming apart and actually revealing Grimmauld Place, it's like they're none the wiser. They're just sitting there watching telly. You know, it was kind of funny.
Yeah. Gosh, so from Grimmauld Place, we travel to the Ministry for Harry's hearing. Correct.
That is correct.
The biggest indoor set on a Harry Potter movie since The Chamber.
And they,
I don't think there's been a bigger one in any other movie up to that point. That's a huge set.
Yeah, it had to be done in a pretty big studio because, I mean, there's no way to CG what they were trying to pull off in the movie.
Oh, sure.
When Harry's first going to his trial, it's Arthur who takes him.
Uh-huh.
And it's funny because they go via the Muggle way, and it's pretty hilarious to see Arthur go through the subway turnstile.
Oh, cool!
No, they're in the tube.
They put it in! Hooray! Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Oh God, we were just thinking that because we were just there. We were just there in London, and we were with somebody who said, Arthur would. Well, Arthur would love these turnstiles here. He'd be going back and forth and back and forth. And
well, it kind of is like that because he just goes up to it and he's like he's staring at the turnstile and Harry finally like takes his transit card or whatever and like taps the top of the thing and it gives him entry and he's like he said something about this Muggle way or something to that effect. It was pretty endearing though.
They had the Oyster cards. That's so funny. I was, no, you Uckers will know what that is. Oh, that's so funny.
That's cool.
So they take the tubes, they go to the Ministry.
And actually they go in through, like, the Muggle entrance of the Ministry.
Was it the phone booth?
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very good.
The phone booth is pretty sweet.
Cool.
That's very cool. And there's lots of, you said the Muggle entrance, there's other ways to get into the Ministry. We've read there's, you know, all the fireplaces and all that stuff.
Yes, and you see that both when, because the time of day that they go to the Ministry, it seems to be like quote-unquote rush hour. So you like, it's almost like when you see those scenes of people going into the Pentagon.
Yeah.
Early in the morning, you know, it's a mad rush of people just going through and getting to their departments or whatever. And you see some people arriving via flu. So there's all these fireplaces and people just, boom, they're just, you know, appearing through.
So when you're going through this amazing scene and you see, and then things start to get a little more serious. And then we meet Miss Umbridge. How, when you saw her pinkness, was she the pink woman that you, with her little voice, her little...
Okay. When you first see Umbridge, you see her at Harry's trial.
She's not wearing
and
a pink.
And you don't really see her in pink because she's wearing like one of these sort of whatever, justice type robes.
Yeah.
So you don't see her actual pinkness.
Yeah.
Until the first day at Hogwarts, in the main hall, in the Great Hall, I should say.
But do you hear a voice? I mean, does it have that, you know, I was described as that sickly sweet voice? And
Yes, because the first thing, of course, you know, they're going on and on with these proceedings, and of course she adds her, ahem, And it's so high-pitched, I can't even attempt to get close to there where she was doing it. But it's so high-pitched, and it's, you just, everybody just kind of, like, cranes their neck at her, and it's like, who the hell is that?
Yeah. And I remember how she was written originally, is it makes her sound, it's very, very eerie, because she doesn't really speak up or anything much. Like, she was just, like, this shadowy kind of person next to Fudge there, and just kind of looking very calculating and just kind of looking at the scene, and it's like you don't really know what's up with this person. Then you find out it's Umbridge, and then you find out that she's, you know, the bad sort, and it's really interesting how she's just kind of very, you know, calculating, and then realizing that she is the one that sent the Dementors after Harry too.
Mm-hmm.
But, so they had trials in there. Such a cool scene.
I know, because Arabella Fig's but, there. Was Fig? Was she in her, like, little, her little flippers that she...
Yes, you actually see Miss Fig right after Harry knocks out the Dementors. And she kind of introduces herself to Harry a little bit. And she kind of walks back with her and with him and Dudley, and back to, you know, for Private Drive.
Yeah.
And right before she goes away, as it were, right before she goes to her house, which is across the way from Harry and Dudley, she says, "Did you really think?" She says something to the effect of, "Did you really think Dumbledore would leave you here alone? You know, he told me to watch you."
Aww.
And so then she says, "Get inside, you know, as soon as you can." And so they go inside, and then you're treated to a really hilarious scene with, you know, the Dursleys, who are suffering, of course, the effects of the heat wave. So if you can imagine,
sweaty, you know, Dursleys.
if you can imagine, you know, Uncle Vernon and Aunt Petunia in, like, shorts. So.
Awesome.
You know?
So were there caps, though? That's this is perfect. The big thing, because there's a big, you know, little something.
Yes.
There were. Okay, cool. See? I like this. This is important.
Very cool.
You know, I know we could go through every scene, but I just want to talk to, you know, we were talking about Umbridge and the actors, because there's a lot of new actors in this film, and Umbridge has a very important part in this movie. I mean, how did you feel about her performance when you were watching her? I mean, did she stand out as, I mean, just seemed to be, you were pretty positive about her.
Yeah, I thought, you know, because once I knew who she was, mm-hmm. I mean, I knew who she was as soon as she said ahem, you know?
Yeah.
But once you see her and you're like, you get past the fact that it's, you know, Imelda Staunton,
right.
You just start to say to yourself, you know, I was watching the performance and I said, you know, wow, she's really, really good, because she's not playing it, like, over the top. She's playing it with, like I said in some of my posts, I said she's like, the evil just kind of like bubbles up now and again, in the sense that it's always there, but it's just about to break, you know, the surface tension, but it's like right there on the edge, and in any second, you know, she can snap, and that's the way she played it the whole film. You know, she's just like always like ready to yell at somebody, to snap, and then she turns it right back down, and she's like back to her
yeah.
you know, sort of like quasi nice
yeah.
self, as it were. Do you know what,
yeah.
what I mean?
Oh, totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she's got some of the best interactions, the stuff that she brings out of some of our favorite characters, like Dumbledore and Harry, and even Professor McGonagall.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
The books is some of the most, you know, hilarious character interactions up to that point. And is that, does she have any moments with, like, Professor McGonagall?
Well, she has a pretty big scene with Professor McGonagall. Actually, two. One where they're arguing on the steps is one that I remember. Unfortunately, for right now, I honestly don't remember the context of that argument.
Was that the Trelawney scene when she was sacking Trelawney? You know, Professor Trelawney, they tried to fire her, and Emma Thompson is so brilliant as Trelawney. Was that the scene they were fighting, or is this the
That actually occurs outside.
Oh, it does. Okay.
That occurs in the little courtyard outside, because in effect she sacked Trelawney, and of course she's had all her things brought to the courtyard so she could be, you know, dispatched or whatever. And then, so she's having a few words with Minerva there, and then Dumbledore comes out and says, you know, I do give up the, you know, I give you the right that you could dispatch her as a teacher, but I as you know, I don't give you the right to kick her off Hogwarts grounds.
Yeah.
So she has her things taken back to her, to her, you know, wherever she stays at her apartment on Hogwarts grounds.
Yeah, because I was looking forward to that, because Emma Thompson is another equally brilliant, if not, I mean, she's just a fabulous actress, and I was really anticipating that scene the most, because I just thought it could just be so, because there's just, I mean, between Maggie Smith was there, and Dumbledore, and, you know, and I just thought it could be
I have to say, it's quite heart-wrenching.
Is it really? Wow.
Because Emma plays it like she's been sacked, you know, and this is like her whole life there. Do you know what I mean? And you get the sense, like, what am I going to do? She's wondering, what am I going to do now, you know?
Right.
And you get that sense from her portrayal. And it's a really, really, you know, she obviously, like you said, you know, she's a really great actress. And her performance is, you know, always going to be great.
Yeah.
You know, she's just flawless, you know?
I hate to keep asking about the actors, but there's one other
fabulous
actor in this movie, and his part becomes more key as the books go along, and that is Alan Rickman's Severus Snape.
Oh, I thought we were going with Jason.
Well, I was going to save him for last. I savor him, but, you know. But,
okay.
You know, I mean, those occumency scenes. How are those done?
Occumency?
Thank you. Someone said it. I don't know. How were those scenes? Were they menacing? I mean, were they just, you know? I mean, how was that?
The scenes, the way they're portrayed on the screen is what you see is basically sort of like flashbacks, because what it is Snape is doing it to Harry, and he's. So he can see, I guess, he's delving into Harry's mind, into his memories, and what he sees is, like, you know, there's snippets of some of the other movies, and there's snippets of things that have just happened in this movie.
Really?
But they're all taken from, like, the camera you see, of course, is the view you see from the camera is, like, Harry's eyes, his view of things that have gone on.
Cool. Well, I think, wasn't it you who was saying in your report that, they don't really use the pensive.
That's correct. They don't.
I guess, I mean, when have seen the pensive. We've seen it before, arguably, but, I mean, it would have added an extra 5 minutes here and there to get into the pensive, to watch him put stuff into the pensive, and to realize,
I agree
hey,
with
we're
you.
In the pensive.
I thought, I didn't understand the reasoning of it being gone, because we had been introduced to it before.
Yeah.
As a magical device, but for whatever reason, maybe they just didn't feel the need to show it that way.
I guess it's just a time thing, because you can jump right into a flashback and you realize, hey, this is a flashback, here's the haze. But
well, that's what happens. What happens is Harry and Snape are arguing you know, about the lessons, and Snape takes the tone throughout this movie sort of like Harry's drill sergeant.
Okay.
And, of course, he wants him to do well. But he's like, you know, of course, you know, he's amping it up, and he's yelling at him. He's like, well, you know, if you say you can do it, come on, do it. And then Harry does, and he goes into that really bad memory of Snape's, and then, of course, Alan Rickman is all flustered and really mad at Harry, and he's just like throwing papers and stuff, and as he's throwing him out of his office, get out, you know.
That's awesome. And that really changes. That really changes the whole thing, because, you know, in the book, it's like Harry, you know, is being accused of sneaking around and snooping into the pensive when he shouldn't have, but it was totally invited upon him then. It's like, sure, Snape is pretty much saying, do this, you know, but let me see.
Yeah, but I don't think he knew he was going to go after that particular memory.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't know how much control you can have over what you're digging for, especially if you don't know what you're looking for.
Maybe it's what's floating around in that person's subconscious.
Yeah, definitely.
Speaking of memories, the one the fans are quite keen on are the flashback of the Young Marauders. I mean, how were you happy with that as a fan? I mean, as a person who read the book, were you happy with the way that came across? I mean,
not really.
Really,
I'll be honest with you. I thought, from my recollection of reading the book, I thought that there would be much more detail, and you would see, like, Lily trying to defend Snape. You didn't see that at all.
Mm.
You know, it's a very, very short scene, unfortunately, you know. It's just, all you see is, like, Snape kind of sitting on the grass, and then, you know, the Young Marauders coming to taunt him, as it were. And it's... Then you just see Snape up in the tree.
Wait a second. So we don't see Harry's mom at all? We don't see
You know what? If she's there, she's there as maybe window dressing, but she does not have an active role in the scene.
What a bummer.
And like I said, you know, like I told people in the comments boards and stuff, I said, you know, this is a rough cut. There may be more scenes that they cut out. They might add something. I don't know.
I want her to be there and really cute. And she's
I always thought when I was reading the books that kind of showed, Lily was kind of altruistic, and I thought some of that wound up in Harry. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I figured that maybe they want to show that connection between the two, but I guess they didn't.
But they
just giving the shaft to the redhead girls in these movies, because I heard that we don't see much of Ginny either.
But
is that true?
Yeah, it's Lily. Though Lily's in the flashback of the original order in that picture scene, right? When Moody shows him or Sirius shows Harry the photo of the original order, is Lily and James in that? I think yes.
Yes, they are. As are the Neville the Longbottoms.
Oh, see, that's very powerful to me. I mean, I just think that's whoa.
And they actually make a point of focusing on the Longbottoms.
Well, obviously, then there's Death Eaters come in, and another. We're talking about Jason Isaacs, obviously. And Bellatrix Lestrange is played by Helena Bonham Carter. So, how was she? Was she just as evil, or
Bella?
She was as over the top as you probably may have imagined the character.
Really?
And yeah, she's like rah, you know. She's not playing it subdued at all.
Oh man. It's not like cartoony, is she?
No, it's not cartoony. But when she initially breaks out of Azkaban, it's pretty brutal.
Wait, they show the actual breakout?
Yes, they do.
Oh.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think they show the breakout via a page in the
Daily Prophet.
The Daily Prophet.
Interesting. With a bunch of naked Dementors running around? Walking through walls?
No, they look like normal Dementors, to my recollection.
Normal.
Oh, that's good. Well, then, I'm sure that they just haven't finished the Dementor in the beginning.
I wanted to ask about Bellatrix, then you had mentioned the Longbottoms. Is there a moment when Neville recognizes or knows who Bellatrix is? I mean, when she does she encounter
well,
him?
Well, there's a scene where Bellatrix recognizes Neville.
Oh, okay.
And she gives him a look, and she hisses something at him, not something to the effect of "I'm gonna get you," you know.
Mm.
And I thought that was pretty peculiar for her to have recognized him as Neville, and
she
singled him out, as it were.
Who else was I wondering about?
Well, what about our friend Ivana Lynch?
Yeah.
Oh, she's incredible.
That's awesome. I've been hearing that a lot too. It's just everybody loves.
She's so kooky. You just want to see her on screen more and more, because her lines and her delivery is just like, you don't even know if she's like actually talking to Harry sometimes. I swear, like I mentioned this in a post, I said there are things that she says that you don't know if she's talking to herself or is she actually acknowledging that Harry's there with her.
Oh, it's so awesome. That's so awesome.
So,
and they're called Thestrals.
They're called Thestrals.
Yes.
And we can't do this interview or people will howl. We have to ask about the dreaded kiss, the smog scene with Cho and Harry.
Of course. It would be remiss of us not to mention the smog. It comes at a point where you totally know what's going to happen.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because she kind of, the DA lessons are over, and she kind of is just hanging back, and you can tell she wants to talk to Harry or whatever. And of course, everybody's looking at Harry, like the twins look at Harry, and they're like, okay, I guess we better leave, you know?
Oh,
and then obviously, Ron and Hermione leave, but of course, they're looking at Harry like, what? And then he's like, he gives him a look like, get out of here.
No, stop CPing me.
And he goes over and talks to Cho, and she, of course, she's looking up at this. They have like a sort of a post-it board with like, you know, like pictures and stuff. And there's a picture of Cedric up there. And she's looking at picture of Cedric, and she's telling Harry how she misses him and whatnot, and how things have been rough for her lately. And they just kind of get closer and closer and closer. Next thing you know, they're like kissing, and they're going at it.
Whoa! It's like the camera's circling them and everything. And
exactly, it's all dramatic and very. I mean, that's why I said the shippers on the site are going to swoon when they see that. You know,
they start floating or anything off the ground.
No, that would have been I think a little bit too much. John,
yeah, like a breeze that circles them and blows their hair up and everything. And
No, that doesn't happen. The next scene we see is Harry sitting near the fireplace in the common room, and he's talking to and of course Ron and Hermione are sitting there grilling him about what just happened, you know.
Yeah.
And as he's retelling the tale, he has this great line, which I'm not going to say because I definitely won't spoil that for anybody.
Okay. Awesome.
But he has this great line. It's really funny right there. And
are there any shared looks? Are there any looks shared with Ron and Hermione during the story? Any?
Well, they kind of look at each other like when he says it, and of course Ron is all, you know, happy and incredibly enthused about the situation. And Hermione, of course, goes into her logic and says, no, she's really confused and blah, blah, blah. And she doesn't really like you or whatever. And it's really, really, you know, she's trying to downplay the whole thing. And Ron is like, oh, woohoo, you know.
Yeah. Well, Hermione's trying to help out Ginny.
Yeah, I guess.
that's what I always figured.
She's Ginny's wingman, huh?
Yeah, totally. Well, so yeah, from what I've been hearing, it doesn't sound like anybody's looking out for Ginny. Does Ginny have any presence in this movie at all? Or is it
in
just
this cut
that
of the
lady?
Movie,
she's went missing.
In this cut of the movie, what I saw, it seems like, you know, Ginny's just there. She's not really, she's not an active participant other than the fact that, you know, they show her, you know, they show off her power really well. Because in those scenes where the DA is practicing, you see her, she's like really outperforming a lot of people there.
Cool. That's good.
And she cast this one spell. Unfortunately, I don't remember the word. But
nothing
she cast this one spell, and it's just, whatever they had like attacking them, some sort of magical, you know, attack dummy or whatever, she completely reduces this thing to like zero.
Wait, back up. They had an attack dummy? They had like a dummy they were practicing on? No.
Yeah, they had like this, you know, for lack of a better word, like this magical attack robot, you know, made out of like wood or whatever.
Yeah, they look like Death Eaters, don't they?
I think so. It did kind of look like a Death Eater.
No.
And they're just practicing trying to, like, hit it with, I think they were trying to hit it with stunning spells, and then it seemed like Ginny's like, well, screw this, and she just goes, boom, and this thing, like, reduced to nothing, you know, it was just dust. Everybody just kind of looked at her gawking like, God, did you have to do that?
Jeez, she bombarded the thing?
I don't know if it
was bombarding. We know that spell.
I don't know that it was bombarding, but she definitely, like, crushed this thing, and it was kind of funny.
Oh, I love robots in the DA. That's
they
so
do a lot of Expelliarmus there. Then, of course, there's a scene where they produce all their Patronuses.
So
that caused a bit of a little bit of Ginny's Patronus. Was it a phoenix? Did you see that?
You know, I tell people it looked like a phoenix to me. It could have been some other bird of prey, but I don't understand in the magical world what a hawk would be doing there, or an eagle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So to me, it was a phoenix.
Do they fly around? Do all of them float? Or
well,
are they all kind of like ruled by gravity also?
No, they're not ruled by gravity at all, because some of them are running around the room itself.
Like, Ron's is like a little dog, right?
As I understand, his is a Jack Russell Terrier, but I don't remember seeing a little dog running around.
Okay, now, I hate to ask about him, but I love this, and I've been said about it before, but Grop, and he was not done, but he's in the movie, right?
He is not, well, the version that I saw, he was not done animatically. You just see, like, kind of a rough block sort of outline of him.
Did you see Tony?
Pardon me?
You see the actor?
Did Tony stand in for him? Tony Monza?
No.
Oh. Did you hear his voice?
You do hear his voice.
We're pretty good?
It's pretty good. It's very gigantic.
Did you say Ermi loves Ermi? Grop loves Ermi. Does he do that little thing?
he does say Ermi.
Oh god.
And he picks her up, and then she, you know, she like tells him to put him down, and
wait,
and then
he picks her
she's
up
looking, and then
like,
of course,
like King Kong picks up Fay Wray or something. You're kidding. He picks up Hermione.
Yeah, I was just thinking of King Kong.
Well, not like Fay Wray, but he does kind of grasp his arm around, or his hand around her.
Oh, no.
And picks her up, and then of course she tells him to put him down. And when he complies, they look, Harry and Ron look at her pretty incredulously, and then she says, "You have to be firm."
Well, all right. So on a more serious note, the end of the film obviously is very, very important. And so how was he in this film? Was he a little less, angry or whatever?
He of course wasn't as angry as he was in Goblet of Fire.
Yeah.
He's a lot more subdued. He's a lot more, for lack of a better word, human.
Oh,
good.
In the film,
so he's all chill.
And yeah, he's very chill, as John said.
You shouldn't have come here tonight, Tom. I'm gonna totally pawn
you
tonight.
You know what? That was one of the better lines he delivered too.
Oh, good.
Thank God.
Yay.
Just the way he said Tom and the way that Voldemort reacted to that.
Oh,
good.
Oh, I'm happy
that's
now.
That's good to hear that he calls him Tom. See, that's important. That's so important. Oh, good.
Everybody was all worried that he was going to be all, you know, angry, crazy, jumping around Dumbledore during this battle. I mean, we want him to be as chill and as totally...
Oh, no.
...in control
of
the
situation.
It
is exactly what you're describing. He's very, very calm throughout the entire battle.
Awesome.
Oh,
and it seems
so perfect.
Seems to be more a battle of wits rather than, like, you know, I'm going to get you by this, you know, I'm going to hurt you by that, you know? It's more like... Voldemort would attack, and of course, Dumbledore would repeal the attack, but using something very, very stylish, you know, to say the least.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, gosh. It's so perfect. We did not
want
to.
The fountain, a lot of people ask me if the statues were there and the fountain. The fountain was there, but there weren't any statues around.
That's interesting. Well, because...
Well, they're probably CG, though. I mean, they're probably...
I mean, the wizard for sure was CG.
That's true, Sue. They could be CG, and they could be added later.
I know the wizard was 100% CG. He wasn't even built, to my recollection.
Well, that would make
but
sense, though.
They'll be in there. I mean, they got to be running around doing stuff during this battle.
So did you feel...
There weren't any shots of anybody struggling against air... Because that would have been a good indication of, you know, Harry being pinned by this invisible statue.
No.
I think you said...
It's like Velcro to the wall.
On Ralph Fiennes, the CG wasn't complete yet, and so he still had, like, those little dot markers on his face.
He had a nose?
He had a nose, correct.
Oh, Voldy nose. You guys were lucky you got to see Voldy nose.
But you know what one of the coolest things is when towards the beginning of the movie when Harry's getting on the train to Hogwarts, he has a vision of Voldemort and he sees him on the platform and Voldemort is wearing like the coolest suit ever, you know? I mean he's really GQ
muggle clothes?
and and really, really in a jet black suit, you know?
Oh, that's
and
weird.
It, of course, with his stark white makeup, it looks awesome.
Wow.
What's he doing in a suit? He's Voldemort.
I don't know what he's doing in a suit, but he was just standing there.
Like
and Harry's
clothes?
Like, ugh, you know?
Whoa.
Oh, that's funny. Does he like flash a big smile?
No, he's kind of grimacing, but he's just standing there. It's almost like a, I'm telling you, it looks like a, like the kind of thing that it would make it into a fashion magazine.
Wow.
Oh, God. Is he
because
wearing,
he's like standing on the platform, and of course there's steam from the train or whatever, and there he is in this jet black suit.
That's so funny.
You know, that's interesting, because we
should have given him, like, a hat.
Yeah, oh, that's cool, like because we've heard, like, an early report that there was somebody that one day when they were filming those scenes underneath, like, they had him, like, hooded, you know, under a blanket and stuff, and so that's what that was. Whoa. That's really cool, although I don't know why.
That's so funny.
Wow. GQ Voldy. Wow. That's something.
That's going to make it to, like, 1,000 avatars.
That's so awesome.
I was thinking the same thing.
Oh, but, okay, but, you know, speaking of fines, though, I mean, that whole, was the possession of Harry and Voldemort, was that scene done well when at the end there during the fight?
The possession scene was done really well, because it's not like you see, like, Voldemort's face inside Harry's. It's more like, Daniel made it look like he knows he's in him, but he's struggling, and you see him struggling not to be possessed, but by the same token, he's, like, speaking the words that Voldemort is speaking, you know?
Yeah.
And his eyes are, like, a different color. They're kind of, like...
black?
Yeah, they're zoned out, and he's, like... There's, like, red inside the... You know, in the eyeballs, the veins there, as it were.
Oh, awesome.
They, like... They show up, and he's, like... Rawr. He's, like... He's kind of growling his line there, but it comes off... It, don't get me wrong, it's not cheesy. It comes off really well.
Yeah.
I swear, I mean, Dan... The Dan Radcliffe we saw a week or so ago in Equus is a whole other actor than, you know, he was her friend from Azkaban, and I think you were saying just how much he has improved overall.
I agree.
Film.
And the acting is the one thing in this movie that's going to set it apart from all the rest. The guy, all the characters, they're all just so comfortable now with, like, the process, I think, that they have their sense of ease on the screen that it comes off, it allows the story to be told so much better in that regard. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh,
well, and two, it could be a different director. I mean, Yates is known for having a little more intimate approach to working with actors, too. I mean, Dan has raved, done nothing but rave about Mr. Yates in the interviews, so maybe that helped, too. I'm excited by it. But
that probably does.
The ending scene, though, there's a scene that's very, very sad for a lot of people. Was that very emotional in one of the rooms in the ministry? Was that very sad, very emotional moment for the audience, for you guys watching that scene?
Oh yes, most definitely. That particular scene, of course, it takes a lot out of you as an audience member because the director cuts off all the sound.
Really?
And all you see is, like, the visual. And it's kind of a little bit in slow motion, and it makes the scene just that much more powerful. And you can tell that Daniel was giving it, he was putting it all on the line in that scene. I mean, he was just vulnerable. And it's an incredible scene. And definitely one of the payoffs of the movie.
Oh, gosh. Well, there's one more scene. I think we went through the whole freaking movie almost. But my biggest concern that I've had since Azkaban, when Gambon came on, was the portrayal of Dumbledore and the relationship he has with Harry. And one of the first moments that is really necessary to see that relationship is in the end of Order of the Phoenix, when Dumbledore, you know, sits him down to tell him about everything. And then, you know, he ends that chapter with a tear in his eye. And you're supposed to see this big relationship that's almost like a grandfather-grandson kind of relationship, and it's a relationship that's done beautifully in the books and miserably on film. And do we feel a relationship with them that is more intense than we've seen previously in that scene.
Yes, you see a relationship that's more than teacher-student, John, but it doesn't, unfortunately, as you were saying, you know, does it do justice to what's in the books? I disagree. It doesn't really do justice to what's in the books, because in the books it's made very clear what that sort of relationship is. And in the movie, you just kind of get this hint that maybe that they're closer than you know, teacher-student, as it were.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't get that sense, because the whole movie, you know, Dumbledore's avoiding Harry.
Yeah.
Like, the whole movie. And, of course, finally when Harry snaps in his office, he tells him why he's been avoiding him.
Sure.
And he goes into it, and you would think it would be a real tender moment where they're by themselves, but the fact of the matter is there's other cast members in the shot. And so it's not like he's just telling Harry, he's telling everyone.
Well, Carlos, you've given us these extraordinary details, and we just appreciate that so much. But one thing I just wanted to know, I mean, in your terms, just overall blanket, I mean, how did you feel about this movie? I mean, were you as positive as you were on, say, like Prisoner of Azkaban? Or, I mean, how did you just think overall that this film was for you? I mean, was this a good experience for you to watch this? Or
I would rank it right now, in its present form, I would rank it higher than, obviously higher than Goblet of Fire.
Obviously,
my
is that
favorite.
Much better?
Yeah, my favorite movie was Prisoner of Azkaban.
Mm-hmm.
But that's me, you know, and I would rank it right up there with it. I mean, to me, this is a slightly better movie, because it moved forward, and there wasn't any. There were a couple scenes with Grop that I said, well, maybe they could cut that and make it a little shorter.
Yeah.
Because it did seem like it was dragging a little bit, but I had a very, very positive experience with this movie, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not just the newness and the fact it's, you know, something I had never seen. I mean, it was just a better movie.
Well, excellent. Thank you so much again for coming on with us, and let's push on through, wrap this show up, and get out of here.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
That was
he's
awesome.
A pretty cool guy. He's so lucky.
Oh.
To get to do all that, I tell you, I'm very jealous.
Oh, I am too. I just would have been out of my mind, you know? I mean, just...
Oh, well, it's not going to be long now.
No.
Will not be long now at all. Actually, this episode, you should be listening to it sometime around the 13th. So that would make it only how many months then till July 13th? April,
Four?
May, June, July. 4 months from about right now.
Right.
You could be in theater watching HB5, the film. Oh, my God.
The bees.
Well, let's bring up the drums here, and let's listen to a few more announcements.
Mm-hmm.
Announcements, announcements, announcements. What a wonderful day to end the day. Announcements. Podcast will be broadcasting live from the Phoenix Rising Fan Convention in New Orleans this May. Everybody who has not signed up and registered for Phoenix Rising should get their little buns over their website and do that now, so you can come see us, do the podcast, and a couple other presentations about podcasting and fan journalism and all the other awesome stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What is that website for Phoenix Rising?
PhoenixRises.org.
PhoenixRises.org. Get over there and do that, and it'll be an awesomely cool time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'd like to vote for us and our cute little show here,
yes,
which I don't think many people have been doing in a while, because we just haven't really emphasized the importance of that. And it is, and it isn't. It is important. I mean, it's not the end of the world, I have to say, but it will bring new people to the show, and which brings new feedback and new, new fans to talk to about the show and all kinds of fun stuff. And the more people that listen, obviously, makes for a better experience for all. So when you vote on those places, more people see the name Pottercast, and it's all good stuff. And I think you can do it at dig.com, too. You can dig the podcast.
All right.
And this makes for lots of happy pandas, and you should probably do that if you care about pandas.
Yeah. Hi, I'm a happy panda, And do you know why?
Very happy to hear that, Sue. Why are you happy?
Well, I was really, really sad because I didn't get to go see you guys in London.
Oh, this is true.
I got to see Melissa, though, recently, because I got to go see her at the Harry and the Potters concert.
Oh, yeah.
In Detroit, and it was awesome.
Harry and the Potters, Paul and the gang.
It was, and a lot of people came up to us, and they said they listened to us on the show, and say shout out to all of you. That was nice. That was
very, very cool.
Nice. It was really cool, and the music was great. They are so good live. It was just
was it just them there, or was it like other bands? You know, like Money and the Grangers.
The guy from Brian from the Draco and the Malfoys was playing drums with them, and
he
was so good. I mean, he never missed a beat. I mean, he was just the music. I mean, Paul is so good, and Joe, he's playing saxophone. It was just wonderful.
That's
wonderful.
Awesome.
It was really, really good. I just think they're fantastic.
That's so cool. Well, I'm also excited to report that Pottercast good friends, Mr. Alex of the Remus Lupins.
Oh, yes.
Has led the charge for a new Wizard Rock band.
Oh, is that right?
So I'll excite many of you Big J fans, as I believe it is called John and the Noes.
No.
And I think they actually have their own MySpace page now. You guys should all look for it.
Really?
It's very
how
first
cool.
song up there. And pretty darn cool, I gotta say.
Awesome. So you get Alex singing on yours? That is way cool.
I do. That's pretty sweet, actually. I told them that it probably would have been more fulfilling to create a Tony and the Modulies band, but he said that he'd have to get to that next.
Yeah.
Because he'd already had a couple songs in mind for the Noe band. But
well, so your backup group are the Dollishes, is that it?
Yes, that's the Dollishes,
Dollish Darlings, or
actually
like
these triplets, who look a little bit like Dollish, actually.
Uh-huh.
Their voices blend so well together. They are going to be singing backup, and it's a very lucky find to find three triplets actually named Dollish that can sing. So
who'd have thunk? The odds on that must have just been astronomical.
Astronomical indeed. You'd never believe it if I didn't just tell you it was the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of nonsense, let's get to these little MySpace messages from all of our friendly Ooh. MySpace fans that write us things.
Yes, they do.
You want to start them off, Susie?
Sure. We got some great messages from the Elephant on the Bus. I don't even. Elaine B versus Snape, Claire, Jesse, Kiri Luna, Lily P, the Poltergeist, Film Student Wannabe, Kayla with a C, Kira Victoria, Soph, Josh, a.k.a. always a sidekick. John?
J. Possum Cass, pronounced like gas with a K in the front. Is that really their people's names?
Or
are they just giving us help of pronunciation?
Maybe. We don't know.
How else would you say Cass?
I would say Cass. I would do that.
Well, I don't even know what she's thinking.
Cass.
Whatever.
No.
Robbins, Tom Riddle, Sherry 2, a.k.a. Silver Blue Bonnet, Joey Myrtle, Nicola Nonsuch. That's what I need a pronunciation help on, that Cass.
Yeah.
Whatever. Nick R, Deb, Zachary B, Billy the Kid, Potter Boy, Sammy, MZ, Tammy, Alex, Riley Bear, Melanie Tiffany, Caroline Jacob, and Serious Discussion.
Woohoo! Cat Rock.
Awesome, very friendly podcast listener, MySpace groupie people. Mm-hmm. Very cool. And I can't believe that this is the end of the second one without Melissa.
I know, it's sad. You know, and all the MySpace people, too, have left me a lot of really nice birthday messages, too, so I thank you for that, too.
This is true. Some little Susie girl is having a birthday.
Yes, I'm turning 21.
Yes, Suze, finally.
Yes, finally, I'm growing up.
You're actually allowed to work in the Leaky Cauldron pub now.
I know. I'm finally legal to go pour
Very
some
cool.
fire whiskey. Awesome. Not that I would know anything about that, no. I'm excited, though, so, you know.
Very, very excited. Everybody will have to be sure to leave Sue loads of birthday messages.
Mm-hmm. Squeeze.
Lots of squeeze. Well, I think that for as far as Pottercast 80s without Melissa goes, it's probably one of our best.
You know it is.
We've ever done.
I think so, John.
And just because she's not around to yell at us to just go, we're wasting time, we should probably...
Just go! You're wasting time!
Mosey on anyway.
Let's mosey on the heck out of here. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you want to talk about the Carlos interview or anything else from this week's podcast, head to podcast.com.
Mm-hmm.
head to the Leaky Lounge podcast area, and I'm sure Mr. Carlos will be in there to answer any of your additional questions about what he had experienced in the Chicago screenings.
That was fabulous. It was great. Thanks for him for being here. That was awesome.
Well, thanks for listening, guys. Let's push on out. We'll see you next week for Podcast 81. I'm Big J. This is Sue, sort of, over there.
Yep. Bye. Bye, everyone.
Later.
Bye.
Bobby is free.
Oh, and about time, too.
We've missed it.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great Scott, no wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours.
Spooky how the time flies when one's having fun.
Okay. Good.
You
got that settled.
Spoiler cast! Brought to you by John and Sue!
Okay.